This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley of TVWorthWatching.com, sitting in for Terry Gross. Not a lot of people love show tunes and avant-garde music. Fewer still can perform both well. But today's guest, Theo Bleckman, is full of vocal surprises. He's been a part of the New York downtown music scene for more than 15 years. He's performed with Meredith Monk, John Zorn, Laurie Anderson, and the Bang on a Can All-Stars. He's been a soloist with the Estonian Radio Choir, Merce Cunningham Dance Company, and the Mark Morris Dance Group. His new CD, I Dwell in Possibility, is a meticulous recording, using no processing whatsoever. It features Bleckman performing vocal solos while accompanied by music boxes, auto harp, water, and various toys with which he amplifies and gently distorts his voice. Writing about Bleckman and his new album in The Village Voice, jazz critic Francis Davis calls him the most startlingly original male vocalist since Bobby McFerrin. This is Bleckman's version of a standard, Comes Love.
Comes a rainstorm, put your rubbers on your feet. Comes a snowstorm, you can get a little heat. Comes love, nothing can be done. Comes a fire, and you know just what to do. Blow a tire, you can buy another shoe. Comes love, nothing can be done. Don't try hiding, 'cause there isn't any use. You'll start sliding when your heart turns on the juice. Comes a headache, you can lose it in a day. Comes a toothache, see your dentist right away. Comes love, nothing can be done.
Theo Bleckman moved to New York in 1989 from his native Germany. In 2008, he released a CD saluting his homeland called Berlin, Songs of Love and War, Peace and Exile. That's when Terry Gross spoke with him. The album features songs by Kurt Vile, Bertolt Brecht, Hans Eisler, and others. On this track, Theo Bleckman sings Surabaya Johnny from the Brecht Vile musical Happy End.
Ich war jung, gerade erst 16 Jahre. Du kamst von Burma herauf. Du sagtest, ich solle mit dir gehen. Du kämest für alles auf. Ich fragte nach deiner Stellung. Du sagtest, so war ich hier steh. Du hättest zu tun mit der Eisenbahn und nichts zu tun mit der See. Du sagtest viel, Johnny, kein Wort war wahr, Johnny. Du hast mich betrogen, Johnny, zur ersten Stunde. Ich hasse dich so, Johnny, wie du da stehst und grinst, Johnny. Nimm doch die Pfeife aus dem Maul, du Hund. So. Und ich liebe dich so. Surabaya, Johnny, warum bin ich nicht froh? Du hast kein Herz, Johnny, und ich liebe.
Theo Bleckman, welcome to Fresh Air. That's such a really good version of Surabaya Johnny. Would you talk about what the lyric means?
Well, the lyric is a love song pining for somebody that no longer loves him and was abusive. And that is the gist, the core of the song. Of course, it's usually sung by a woman, but in this case, I'm singing it as a man, from a man to a man.
So you're out as a singer?
Yes. Out as a singer, out as a person.
Okay. Now, I particularly like the spoken part in that song. Mm-hmm. It's like you're acting the song.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you could talk a little bit about doing that kind of Sprechstimme. What's the Brechtian word for it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where it's part spoken, part sung.
Exactly. It's sort of that in-between place where there's no pitch, but you're still somewhat singing the phrases. It's a very strange place. I feel very connected to that lyric because I have been in a relationship like that, not with physical abuse, but, abusive otherwise. And so it felt very close to my heart. I didn't have to really search that long to really find a place that I could connect to in this case.
Now, most of the songs on your CD, Berlin, are songs with lyrics by Bertolt Brecht.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in Germany.
Yes.
What did Brecht's songs mean to you in Germany when you were living there?
Nothing.
I'm glad I asked. Really? So did you not know them until you moved to America?
I did know them, but from a far distance, and I wouldn't have touched them. But when I came here, I work a lot in music that has no words. And I work a lot in music that has English lyrics. And most of all, sometimes very abstract lyrics. So for me to sing this material was a far stretch at first. And then when I realized how close I actually felt, how closely related I felt to them, it was actually quite overwhelming because it's part of my history and it's also part of the history of this country right now in terms of the political context that these songs on this record especially have. So it was sort of a homecoming for me.
We heard Surabaya Dear Johnny, which is a song about someone whose lover is has been abusing them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to change the tone a little bit and play another track. And this is a song with a lyric by Bertolt Brecht and music by Hans Eisler.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask you to pronounce it, but it's Als ich in meinem Liebe trug.
Als ich dich in meinem Leib trug.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. And this is a much more like march-like and in some parts dissonant song. Tell us what it means in English and why you chose to sing it.
This is one song of a little suite that we actually took apart on the record, but it's four songs of a working mother song to her unborn child, in which she tells the child that you are coming into a very difficult and sad world and that they're already planning victories with your little body. But there's a little bit of hope in those songs, too, in saying that I hope that you will stand up against tanks and generals and fight against them. So that's sort of the gist of these four songs, and that's one of them.
And that explains the march-like beat.
Yes.
So this is Theo Bleckman from his latest CD, Berlin, Songs of Love and War, Peace and Exile.
Als ich dich in meinem Leib trug, war es um uns gar nicht gut bestellt. Und ich sagte oft, der, den ich trage, kommt in eine schlechte Welt. Und ich nahm mir vor zu sorgen, dass er sich da etwa auch nicht irrt. Den ich trage, der muss Sorgen helfen, dass sie endlich besser wird. Ooh.
That's singer Theo Bleckmann from his CD Berlin, and the song we just heard was written by Hans Eisler and Bertolt Brecht. Well, we established that growing up in Germany, you weren't paying a lot of attention to the music of Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill. What were you listening to?
I was listening to American musicals. I was listening to a lot of jazz as I got older and into my teens, and that really took over. I was listening to jazz music and then very, very contemporary classical music, Stockhausen, Henze, John Cage.
Were American musicals popular in Germany, or was it unusual for someone young like you to be listening to them?
They were on TV, and I would darken the living room and forbid everybody to walk through the living room when a musical was on because it was my private time with the TV. And then I would find the records for it. I would at that time you had to order the records in a record store, and it would take 6 weeks for them to get there. I grew up in a small town, so but it was a big exciting day when the record arrived, and I would listen to it until the next one came.
So when you saw American musicals on TV, were they in English?
They were dubbed in German, and then they broke out into English songs. It was the weirdest thing, and you wouldn't question it at all that all of a sudden they're singing in a different voice with English words, except for My Fair Lady, which was overdubbed with German singers.
Overdubbed.
The text and the dialogue was overdubbed in German.
How strange.
Mm-hmm.
So did it help you? I assume you were singing along in English. Did you already know English?
Yeah, you learn it in school.
You do?
No, most of it I didn't understand. I always thought in The Wizard of Oz that Judy Garland sang, "I wish I were a porno star and wake up where the clouds are far." But why would she wish that? That is so weird.
Did you really think that?
I really thought that, yeah.
That's great. You were born in 1966.
Mm-hmm.
So you're born, a couple of decades after the war. Did the war have any impact on you when you were growing up, or did that seem like something that was way over?
No. It was very present in my family. My parents were children. My father actually went into the war. He lost a limb in the war. He lost his leg in the Second World War. My parents were quite old when they adopted me, so they were part of that whole generation. Of course, my grandmother too. So there was a lot of history about that in our family. My grandfather, who I never met, but he from my mother's side, he was a big opponent of the war and of the Nazis, and he got into some trouble in our little town. But and my mother had to go to another school because she didn't want to join the Hitler Youth. So there was a lot of impact. And there's still stories that I get from my mother to this day that are about that time.
Did your father want to fight, or was he forced to fight?
He was forced to fight, yeah. And he went to the Russian front and came back, crippled.
And do you know the story behind your adoption?
I know very little. I tried to find my birth mother. When I turned 30, I got this bee in my bonnet that I would want to do that, especially fueled by all these reunification stories that you see on TV. And so I wrote to the adoption agency through which this process had to be facilitated, and they sent my letter to my birth mother, which they had found, and then she sent a letter back through the agency to me saying that she didn't want to meet me. Didn't want to get to know me. This went on for two more letters, I think, and me saying, I just want to meet you. There's no financial impact, or I'm not a crazy person. But she just didn't want to meet me. So that was the end of that, and I didn't pursue it anymore after that.
Do you feel bad about that?
Well, it was a second adoption, really. It was being adopted given up a second time. Maybe my hopes were too high, but it was difficult, I have to say. It was difficult, but it's done. Closed chapter.
My guest is singer Theo Bleckmann. You know, we talked about how much you loved show tunes growing up mm-hmm. in Germany. And an earlier CD that you did a couple of years ago called Las Vegas Rhapsody has a lot of like show tunes and American pop tunes on in it. Are any of the songs on that album songs that had personal significance from your childhood?
Particularly Out of My Dreams and We Kiss in a Shadow meant a lot to me because those were two of the songs that were on records that I had bought and listened to over and over and over again. I think I got those lyrics right, hopefully.
Those are actually my two favorite tracks on the album. And
Thank you, Terry.
I thought we'd play We Kiss in the Shadows. And this is from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical, The King and I. Is that one of the musicals that you watched a lot?
Yes. When they would come on TV, there was no VCR or anything, so you know, maybe once a year.
Well, let's hear it. This is We Kiss in the Shadows, and Fumio Yasuda is accompanying you at the piano, and this is from Theo Bleckman's album, Las Vegas Rhapsody.
We kiss in a shadow, we hide from the moon, our meetings are few. Too soon, we speak in a whisper, afraid to be heard. When people are near, we speak not a word. Alone in our secret, together we sigh for one smiling day to be free. To kiss in the sunlight and say to the sky, behold and believe what you see. Behold how my lover loves me.
That's Theo Bleckman from his album Las Vegas Rhapsody. And his CD Berlin features German songs, mostly songs with lyrics by Bertolt Brecht. And Theo Bleckman grew up in Germany. How old were you when you moved to the United States?
I was 23.
Now, you mentioned your dream was to be a painter. I had read that you were an ice dancer in Germany. Is
yes.
that wrong?
That's correct. Yes, during my voice break, I needed something else to do, so I went into figure skating. And, after my voice came back, that took back seat.
So what kind of music did you dance to as a figure skater?
Oh, of course, show tunes. Gershwin. one of the routines we did was to a Sweet Charity medley. And Gershwin, I always thought it would be so kooky to use a Webern string quartet or something completely atonal and crazy. But, of course, so many people have the fingers in their pie of what decisions are being made, including costumes and music. And so that was never an option.
What's the greatest costume you wore?
Spandex, of course, and lots of glitter on it.
Now, when you talk about your voice break, because you were singing as a boy and you had to wait out the break in your voice, it sounds like, well, you know, taking a little hiatus while my voice breaks. But it must have been kind of scary for you when your voice broke to not know how
scary.
It would come back.
Oh, my God, yes. Especially when your identity as a musician, as a child, was so closely linked to that. I remember being in the recording studio and doing a recording at that time, and I thought that licorice would help it go away. So I just kept eating licorice, bag after bag after bag, and it would help. You know, it goes up and down in the beginning, so I thought, oh, this is really working. But of course it didn't. Yeah, it is scary.
I'd like our listeners to hear your more contemporary or experimental, whatever you want to call it, that side of you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there something you'd like us to play?
Well, maybe Norwegian Wood, which sort of brings together both of those elements.
Song and adventure.
Mm-hmm. That's nicely put.
You do something in the break of this that sounds kind of like Tuvan throat singing.
Mm-hmm. Which it is, yeah. I worked on my overtone singing some while back and see if I could refine it on my own and work on which overtones I get when, and sort of that part entered this arrangement.
Is there a way, would you be willing to just like demonstrate what it is that you do, like how it sounds and how you get
there?
Well,
the easiest way to start overtone singing is to go into your bathroom, if you have a, you know, especially reverberant bathroom, and start singing your mid to low range on the word bird and stay on the er, especially easy for Americans, especially from Texas. Bird. And play around with the position of the tongue and move it back and forth very slowly and listen to what's coming out.
Is it the lips, too, that you're moving?
Not so much the lips, but the inside of your mouth.
Uh-huh.
The cavities are changing. Mostly the tongue. It's the tongue position.
But when you sing in overtones, it sounds like you're singing several notes at one time.
They just swing along. They just ring along with what I'm singing because they're present. It's like a color spectrum. Each color has other colors in it. The color white has all the colors in it. So I just, by just changing the shape of my mouth, I emphasize red and blue and yellow and purple in the spectrum.
Okay, so let's hear what you do with Norwegian Wood, singing it and doing a little throat singing, overtone singing in there. And this
mm-hmm.
is from an album that you made with the guitarist Ben Maunder, and the CD is called At Night.
I sat on a rug, biding my time, drinking her wine. We talked until 2, and then she said, it's time for bed. She told me she worked in the morning, started to laugh. I told her I didn't and crawled to sleep in the bath. That's
singer Theo Blackman with Ben Maunder on guitar from their album At Night. Because you have such range and flexibility and tonal variety with your voice, I think you've also done some like movie special effects.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell us what you've done.
Well, I got a call some years ago from a friend of mine who was engineering a sound improv session for a movie. And he asked me to read this dialogue in the voice of an alien. And I read through this, and it was this person whose head opens, and then this alien comes out of the head, and then this person falls into a plate of pierogies. And so I was supposed to read this, but pretend I was an alien. And I thought, this is the worst movie script I've ever seen in my life. It was just 2 pages, just this one scene. And so I kept, you know, doing one take, and said, okay, now do it in another way. And I did another take, and this goes on. And after 6 takes, we're like, okay, done. I said, who directs this? This is not even a B movie. This is like an F movie. And he said, this is a Steven Spielberg production called Men in Black.
Men in Black.
Yes. Well... That little
movie, yeah.
Yeah.
So, what we'll hear the scene, but tell us what you did vocally.
I just improvised what to me could be alien language, and you know, they asked for it to be lip syncable, so not too crazy, so that people could learn it. I think what ultimately happened in this session was that it was to complicated for them, or I don't know what happened, but usually my biggest pet peeve with these alien voices is that they all have this strange reverb on them, if you've noticed. So there's so much effect on this alien in the movie that I can't even tell if it's my voice or somebody else's voice.
Oh, because it's so processed?
It's so processed. It's so strange. Like, aliens come to this world with a complete reverb chamber and EQ system that surrounds them.
Hey, they have better technology on other planets. So since we won't be able to tell it to you on the film, do you want to just do what you did?
Well, I did something like... Perhaps something like that.
It almost sounds like it was processed in some part.
If you put enough reverb on it, yeah.
So when you moved to America, you were 23. Were you already out in Germany when you moved to the States?
No. No, I still had a girlfriend when I moved here. And the way I was outed in Germany was I was reviewed in a gay magazine for a record that I did, saying that I was gay. And I thought my life would end. I thought, this is it. My life is over. I will have no career. And everybody will hate me. I might as well just, pack it up. And first of all, nobody cares. Nobody reads the thing, first of all. And then secondly, nobody cares. That's the most amazing thing. Nobody cares.
So what year is this?
This was 1991.
So this was a German gay magazine?
Yes.
So did nobody care because nobody cared about you, or did nobody care because the atmosphere was that open that nobody cared that you were gay?
Yeah, exactly. And
open?
Most people
open?
Open, and most people will say, oh, we already knew. Hello, you were ice skating.
You're ice skating to show tunes.
Yes.
With glitter costumes, yes. So, do you still skate?
No. The last time I went skating was with a good friend of mine, Maria Schneider, who used to be a figure skater herself.
Oh, she's a jazz composer and arranger. Yeah.
Yes, and we went figure skating in Central Park when the Christo installation was up, and that was really fun. But after an hour, I can't even stand it anymore because my feet start to hurt so much in my old skating boots that I just have to stop.
Right. Okay.
And it's kind of depressing. You can do one trick and that's it. One little pirouette or one lame little jump. That's no fun anymore.
You've worked with like sound distortion and manipulation and electronic music and stuff. And the German group Kraftwerk was one of the first groups to bring like the pop version of electronic music.
Yes.
And, they had big hits. Did they have any influence on you when you were younger?
Absolutely. I actually perform one of their songs.
No, really?
Yes. With a little Casio keyboard.
Not the Audubon?
No, it's called The Model. That's Model. I love them. I think they're absolutely genius. I can't say enough about them. I tried to get tickets to their concert last time they were in New York, but it was impossible. I worship at their feet. They're amazing.
So what's the song that you do, The Model?
It's called The Model. She's a model and she's looking good. Ist the first line of the lyric.
Can you sing a couple of bars of it?
Sie ist ein Model und sie sieht gut aus. Ich nehme sie heute gerne mit zu mir nach Haus. That's the song.
That's like African clicking that you're doing as you hum, yes?
Yes. I'm trying to be my own Casio.
Have you studied a lot of world singing techniques?
Not really. I think a lot of this stuff is self-evident when you start exploring.
Uh-huh.
I've done a lot of just recording myself, exploring, seeing what I can do. Let's say I would go through the alphabet. I start with the letter A, and I come up with every sound that I can with this, on the vowel A. And then I take the first one, and I make three variations on the first one, etc. So it becomes this tree of variations.
Show me what you mean.
So let's say I have A. Try to get a buzz in there a little bit. Then I make a variation on that one. Put a vibrato in it. Or I go, do it staccato. Then I do another gravelly ah on maybe on a slide. Etc. And then I do, you know, other ahs, other sounds with ah that have different variations. So I write them down and meticulously lay it out and see if I can combine them. So that's where the click comes in, where I have etc. You know, it's endless. It's an endless game of just trying to find sounds and see what you can do. Sort of like a painter taking their colors and putting them together and mixing them to different degrees and seeing if this one works next to that one, and let's put, you know, more white into that and more this and more that. So it's very simple. But then, and this goes back to Meredith, then the hardest part is, what does it mean? What is this about? Is this just a cool effect, or what am I trying to say here? And this is what I'm constantly struggling with and working on, is why this sound, why that sound? What does it mean to me? And that's when the work starts to, I think, to jam and get more into a deeper place for me.
Well, Theo Blackman, thank you so much for talking with us. And thank you for demonstrating some of the things that you can do with your voice.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Singer Theo Blackman speaking to Terry Gross in 2008. His new CD is called I Dwell in Possibility. A hit at last year's Sundance Film Festival, the documentary called Catfish opens in many cities this week. Dubbed a reality thriller by Universal, its distributor, the film tracks an increasingly intense online relationship between the brother of one of the New York filmmakers and a family in Michigan. Film critic David Edelstein has this carefully spoiler-free review.
There have been rumors that the documentary Catfish isn't on the up and up. I mention this for a couple of reasons. The first is, I'm gun-shy these days about narrative nonfiction. Apart from all the literary memoirs that have turned out to be fake, there are documentaries like Tarnation, Banksy's Exit Through the Gift Shop, and recently, I'm Still Here, in which you can't completely trust what's on screen. It's true, documentaries should always be approached cautiously, since it's easy to manipulate reality, even when a filmmaker takes a passive, fly-on-the-wall approach. But more than ever, the video diary format lends itself to subjects who are acting instead of being. The second reason I mention these charges is that even if parts of the movie are, let's say, engineered, Catfish works as a great story of isolation, deception, and finally, connection in our strange, new, internet-oriented world. One other thing that's so strange and new is that, thanks to high-def video, making a movie can be almost as easy as breathing. It was hard and expensive to pick up a 16mm camera and shoot hundreds of hours. But you can keep a video diary of anything. You don't have to know where it will lead, which is the foundation of Catfish. Here's the scene. Two New York filmmakers, Ariel Schulman and Henry Joost, who usually make dance documentaries, get interested in something happening to Schulman's younger brother, Taniv, or Neve. He's a photographer and has published in a magazine a striking photo of a female dancer lifted high by a male. On Facebook, Neve has been contacted by an 8-year-old girl from rural Michigan named Abby. She wants to send him a painting she did of his photo, and when it arrives, it's better than good. It captures the energy in the dancer's limbs, the sense of transcendence in their flight. Abby sends more paintings. She's a prodigy. And through Facebook, Neve makes contact with her older sister, Megan, who's very attractive in photos and clearly has the hots for him. It's no wonder, since Neve, with his dark hair and eyes and boyish diffidence, might as well be called Mr. Adorable, and he's just as excited about Megan. The first phone conversation between the two is charming and awkward, like old-fashioned young lovers a-courtin'.
Hey, Megan?
Yeah.
Hey, it's Neve.
Hi, how are you?
Your voice is not at all what I expected.
I'm sorry.
Really, it's a terrific voice. I don't know. I guess you never really think of a voice when you only know somebody in a certain way. I happen to think my voice is sort of irritating. Oh, thank you.
I can't talk in too much detail about Catfish without giving away its winding and suspenseful trajectory. Obviously, this wouldn't be much of a story if Abby and Megan and their mother, Angela, were entirely as they present themselves. But what and who are they? The trio of guys finally use Google Maps and a GPS and head off to Michigan in search of answers. And there are moments when Catfish develops a Blair Witch Project-like vibe. Maybe Facebook will claim three victims. Indeed, the studio's marketing plays up the mystery thriller aspect with dark, empty houses in the woods and details that don't add up. And here, I must stop, except to say the emotions the movie kicks up run the gamut from anxiety to contempt to curiosity to compassion. One of the characters turns out to have unimagined depth, and by the end, I was fighting off tears. As for that charge that Catfish has faked, I don't believe it. Certain scenes do feel less authentic than others, as if they're being played up for the sake of drama. For example, Neve's starry-eyed responses to Megan's emails. But there is underneath a true sense of adventure. The film gets at the magic carpet aspect of this new medium, which whisks you into other people's lives so quickly and intensely. Although there are dangers, although you can't fully trust what you read online, there's always the potential for revelatory encounters. In this new realm, people compulsively hide and expose themselves in fascinating and unpredictable ways, ways that can draw you more deeply into their inner lives than face-to-face interactions. Every person in Catfish comes out feeling more alive, and so does the audience.
David Edelstein is film critic for New York Magazine. He reviewed Catfish, the new documentary about a computerized social networking site. Fresh Air's Anne-Marie Baldonado just returned from the Toronto International Film Festival, where she saw 22 movies in 6 days. You can read all about her experience and see her photos from the festival on Fresh Air's Tumblr at nprfreshair.tumblr.com. And Tumblr is spelled without an E, T-U-M-B-L-R. This is Fresh Air. I'm TV critic David Bianculli. Boardwalk Empire, the new organized crime drama series from HBO, begins Sunday. Yes, the network that gave us The Sopranos is hoping to prove again that crime does pay, at least so far as subject matter for a weekly series. Boardwalk Empire is set in Atlantic City in the 1920s. It starts just before Prohibition, with city movers and shakers holding a huge party and literally counting down the seconds until the new law banning alcohol will make them even richer.
9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1!
When you hear HBO is presenting another drama series about the mob, the initial reaction is that the network is ripping off The Sopranos and the many crime films of Martin Scorsese. Except that Boardwalk Empire is created by Terrence Winter, who produced and wrote or co-wrote dozens of episodes of The Sopranos, including the classic Pine Barrens episode. And the pilot of Boardwalk Empire is directed by Martin Scorsese himself, who's also an executive producer. So if anyone has earned the right to explore more of this territory, it's these guys. Based on Nelson Johnson's nonfiction book about the colorful history of Atlantic City, Boardwalk Empire begins as Prohibition made the sale of alcohol illegal. One of the characters poised to profit immediately is Nucky Thompson, played by Steve Buscemi and based on a real-life Atlantic City power broker named Nucky Johnson. Boardwalk Empire, like the book and movie Ragtime, mixes actual historical characters with invented ones. So we get a young, cocky Al Capone, but we also get a wholly invented young thug named Jimmy Darmody, a World War I veteran played by Michael Pitt. Jimmy has returned from the front lines with an itchy trigger finger. And Nucky, who up to now has made his fortune without spilling blood, isn't happy about his employee's violent streak.
Nucky. Nuck! I take you back.
Nucky.
Give you a job.
Listen.
And this is how you pay me.
Last night was not supposed to happen like that, Nuck.
Oh, make sure you mention that to Rothstein as he's cutting your ass off.
It's all gonna get straightened out, Nuck, I promise.
Are you that stupid? I have no idea how in over your head you are.
I know it's a lot of
money. Did I not tell you to slow down? I tried to give you money. I tried to
tell you I'm not a kid anymore.
And killing. And larceny. That makes you a man?
No.
You got brains, kid. You got a future.
Look, I still got a future. We both do. The war, Nuck.
That's the side of Steve Buscemi we expect to see. The frustrated hothead who has been so entertaining in supporting roles in Fargo, The Big Lebowski, and yes, The Sopranos. But Nucky is the starring role, and Buscemi makes the most of it. Lording over Atlantic City from his suite of rooms at the Ritz-Carlton, he barks orders, ridicules underlings, and confronts powerful adversaries. Yet he's not all business. He has a dumb but spirited mistress played with all kinds of entertaining zeal by Paz de la Huerta. And very quickly, he develops a soft spot for Margaret, a poor pregnant woman who comes to see him after her husband has lost all their money gambling. Margaret is played by Kelly MacDonald, and in this new crime series, she's the biggest thief of all because she positively steals every scene she's in. You may have been impressed by this young actress in the past. I have, when she starred opposite Bill Nighy in The Girl in the Cafe and co-starred in the original miniseries version of State of Play. But here, Kelly MacDonald, like Steve Buscemi, vaults herself to a new level. Here they are together, in a scene when Margaret first visits Nucky in his lavish office.
Please, have a seat. May I offer you tea?
Thank you, I'm fine.
No, it's no trouble. Have you eaten?
Thank you, no. I mean, I have, yes. I've eaten, but I...
Okay, relax. Please. No more appointments.
Yeah.
Is that a bit of the old country I hear in your voice?
My husband says I sound like an immigrant.
Ah, but we're all immigrants, are we not?
It takes several episodes, I've seen the first six, for their relationship to evolve into something different and something potentially dangerous. All of Boardwalk Empire is like that. Think of it as a chess game, where the opening moves establish the positions of various pieces. It takes patience to develop strategies and spring traps, but there's a major payoff. By the third hour, you really care about these people, and that makes the stakes and the violence more intense. In fact, there are scenes in Boardwalk Empire that are unforgettably violent. Not over the top, like a carnage-obsessed video game, but unforgettable for their emotional intensity. Like when Roman Polanski sliced Jack Nicholson's nostril in Chinatown. It's Atlantic City, Jake, and it's just as powerful. Boardwalk Empire, without question, is better than any new series the broadcast networks are serving up this fall. It's the only new show worth adding to your weekly must-see list. And with its visual majesty and period music, it's like nothing else on TV this year. Unlike most things in Atlantic City, Boardwalk Empire is a very good bet. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hirschfeld. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Melody Kramer is our associate producer of online media. Sue Spolin directed the show. Our theme music was composed by Joel Forrester and performed by the Microscopic Septet. For Terry Gross, I'm David Bianculli.